This is TWiT.
I mentioned that I don't normally talk about Android app security flaws and problems. You know, they have their own podcast here on the TWiT network. And I also suppose it's because it seems like such low-hanging fruit. I mean, our time here is limited every week. But when vulnerabilities have been found and responsibly disclosed in an Android app that has 1.8 billion users worldwide, and when after 90 days of no response from that app's publisher, the responsible and well-known disclosing party decides to finally go public with their vulnerability information, then the situation rises to the level that we need to touch on it here. The Android app in question, as I mentioned, is ShareIt, all capital S-H-A-R-E in all caps, I-T in lowercase. And, you know, I don't follow this stuff that closely, but I recognize that one. And I'd venture that many of our Android-equipped listeners may have a copy. The Google Play Store lists it as ShareIt, Transfer, and Share. It is obviously a super popular file exchange app. It was Trend Micro who examined, discovered, and reported the problem to ShareIt's publisher and received no feedback. Trend Micro wrote, "We discovered several vulnerabilities in the application named ShareIt. The vulnerabilities can be abused to leak a user's sensitive data and execute arbitrary code with ShareIt permissions by using a malicious code or app. They can also potentially lead to remote code execution," and they have RCE, yes, we know. "In the past, vulnerabilities that can be used to download and steal files from users' devices have also been associated with the app," meaning it has a history of problems. They said, "While the app allows file transfer and download of various file types, such as Android package APK files, the vulnerabilities related to these features are most likely unintended flaws." So, ShareIt has over 1 billion downloads in Google Play and has been named one of the most downloaded applications. It was in the top 10 most downloaded applications in 2019. Google has been informed of these vulnerabilities, so we'll see what action, if any, they take. Trend Micro's posting then delves into the details of the app's API registrations, that is, the things it's doing that are causing these problems, and in detail into its operation, which allow arbitrary files to be downloaded and executed, including downloading and installing any APK. You know, and just to be clear, it's not the ShareIt app itself that's malicious, but that its presence in all 1.8 billion Android devices, which are creating security holes large enough to drive Google through. So this creates a huge opportunity for abuse by any other app that wants to get up to some mischief. And now, after Trend Micro's full disclosure, everyone who might want to do that knows about it. They concluded their detailed write-up by saying, "We reported these vulnerabilities to the vendor, who has not responded yet. We decided to disclose our research 3 months after reporting this, since many users might be affected by this attack, because the attacker can steal sensitive data and do anything with the app's permissions." They said it is also not easily detectable. So, mostly a heads up to any of our listeners who have downloaded ShareIt. If it's, you know, it might be one of those free Android apps that you once upon a time download used it for a while and then forgot about it, but it's still installed. If it's still installed, it's a problem. Now would be a good time to say goodbye. Or maybe you use it regularly and cannot live without it. In that case, perhaps be on the lookout for its publisher to finally take the security of their app seriously by producing an update. Maybe this will bring them under some pressure to do that. Or maybe find a hopefully more responsibly written alternative. Anyway, mostly I just wanted to give everyone a heads up about ShareIt because, yikes, it does sound like it's massively installed and its presence is creating a set of vulnerabilities for anyone who has it installed that, you know, that could create problems. Certainly, you can imagine it being used in a targeted fashion. If somebody knows that you're using ShareIt and can get you to download something which is not itself malicious, but then abuses the permissions that ShareIt has asked for itself, you could be in trouble.
Yeah, it's still on the Google Play Store and with no notice of anything. And as you said, 1 billion plus downloads.
Woo-hoo.
That's got to be the majority of Android phones in the world, right?
I think so. That's.
I don't think I've ever installed it. It doesn't look like I ever have. Thank goodness.
Good. You don't want it. And neither do our listeners unless you really need it. And again, it's one of those things. We'll be talking about this theme a little bit. This notion of, you know, removing things you are no longer using because even if they're not still there, you know, they can still represent a problem. So Microsoft, last Thursday, they've got a team they call Detection and Response Team, DART. They post an interesting update about a rapidly growing security threat, which we've not yet ever discussed directly, and that's known. These things are known as web shells. So first, we need to define a web shell. It's a fancy name for some malicious code that, well, you definitely don't want running on your server, or rather actually present in your server. A web shell is typically a small bit of malicious code written in whatever typical server-side web development programming language your server supports. So that would be something like ASP, Active Server Pages, PHP, Personal Homepage, JSP, Java Server Pages, or similar. Attackers somehow arrange to implant their script onto a victim's web server to then provide them with long-term persistent remote access and code execution of server functions. These web shells allow attackers to run commands on servers to steal data or use the server as a launch pad for other activities like credential theft, lateral movement within the infected network, deployment of additional payloads, or hands-on keyboard activity. And most significantly, they allow attackers to rather trivially maintain a persistence within an affected organization, which is surprisingly hard to detect. And this gets picked up by our radar because Microsoft has been monitoring this as a rapidly growing trend. They wrote in their posting Thursday, 1 year ago, we reported the steady increase in the use of web shells in attacks worldwide. They said the latest Microsoft 365 Defender data, which, you know, is their online real-time instrumentation system, shows that this trend not only continued, it accelerated. Every month from August 2020 through January 2021, we registered an average of 140,000 encounters of these threats on servers, almost double the 77,000 monthly average we saw over the same period year over year compared to the previous year. The escalating prevalence of web shells may be attributed to how simple and effective they can be for attackers. As web shells are increasingly more common in attacks, both commodity and targeted, they said, we continue to monitor and investigate this trend to ensure consumers are protected. Microsoft blog posting continues with a little bit of riveting case history. They said, attackers install web shells on servers by taking advantage of security gaps, typically vulnerabilities in web applications, and we'll be talking about one next, in WordPress, in internet-facing servers. These attackers scan the internet, often using public scanning interfaces like Shodan.io, to locate servers to target. They may use previously fixed vulnerabilities that unfortunately remain unpatched in many servers. But they are also known to quickly take advantage of newly disclosed vulnerabilities. For example, last June 30th, F5 Networks released a patch for CVE-2020-5902, a remote code execution vulnerability in Traffic Management User Interface, TMUI. The vulnerability is a directory traversal bug with a CVSS score of our favorite 9.8. We talked about it at the time. Microsoft says, just 4 days later, on the 4th of July, exploit code was added to a Metasploit module. The following day, Microsoft researchers started seeing the exploit being used by attackers to upload a web shell to vulnerable servers. The web shell was used to run common cryptocurrency miners. Now, of course, those were the quaint days, right? When cryptocurrency was being mined. Now, it's your we're going to encrypt all your data. We're going to exfiltrate, as you said, Leo, the embarrassing bits, and then we're going to hold you hostage and make you pay us some Bitcoin.
Yeah. They're so smart, these ransomware folks.
Exactly. Did you see what's happened to Bitcoin, Leo?
Zip.
Yeah.
Actually, it's far worse for you than it is for me.
Oh.
I gave my son my wallet and said, you can hack it. If you can crack it, you know, it's yours. And then I told him, the good news is, by not being able to unlock it, we've watched Bitcoin go through the roof, you know?
That's true. Neil, you're right, because we would have all sold our coin back like so long ago. That is the way I feel better about this.
Wouldn't have the 50 now. You wouldn't. You would have sold it when there were $1,000 each, and you would have said, I'm happy.
I would have thought, woohoo!
Woo, I'm rich! Yes. I told Henry, by the time those 7.85 Bitcoin are worth more than $1 million, we'll have quantum computers and we can just crack the thing. Right?
So you actually do have your wallet. You just
I have the wallet. I forgot the password.
Oh.
Which is really stupid.
Wow.
But we'll be able to crack it. Not maybe with current computing technology, but by then it'll be really worth something. It'll be worth cracking it. That's my attitude.
Good. I like that attitude. And it gives Henry something to look forward to.
It drives him nuts.
Yeah.
It drives him crazy. Weekly, he'll email me, say, did you think of any more passwords you might have used? I actually have it running on my system at home. So if I ever think of a password, I can try it. But so far, no luck. You know when I'm going to feel bad? When it goes down to a buck of Bitcoin.
Right.
Right. Right. Opportunity
like
missed.
Like when it collapses again.
Right. Right. Yeah. If it does, who knows what's going to happen.
If it does. You know, I think it was you who said that some financial group was saying they see this thing going to 150,000.
And with companies like Tesla buying $1.5 billion of Bitcoin, that just props it up further, you know.
Yeah.
So as long as that continues to happen.
Yeah.
Would you like me to take a break?
That's a great idea. In fact, let me just finish this one piece about web shells, and then we'll do that. So once these web shells have been installed on a server, writes Microsoft, web shells serve as one of the most effective means of persistence in an enterprise. Listen to that again. Once installed on a server, web shells serve as one of the most effective means of persistence in an enterprise. And we'll talk about why in a second. They said, we frequently see cases where web shells are used solely as a persistence mechanism. Web shells guarantee that a backdoor exists in a compromised network because an attacker leaves a malicious implant after establishing an initial foothold on a server, that implant being the web shell. If left undetected, web shells provide a way for attackers to continue to gather data from and monetize the networks. I love that. Monetize the networks they have access to. Yes, we're going to do a little, you know, malicious network monetization now. Okay, so just to make the mechanism clear, a web shell script is just a static text file with an extension like .asp, .php, .jsp, or so on. The typical web server will have a bazillion such files. They're little fragments of the whole web system package which are invoked on demand. And if one additional .asp or .php file were to be added to the hundreds of others that are already there, who would ever know? It's like some file appearing in your system, Windows System 32 directory. Remember the quaint old days when there were four files that ran our operating system? Now, there's, you know, no one knows what they all are. So the point is that if one additional PHP file somehow gets added to the, to a contemporary web-based system, it's impossible virtually to detect, and it would tend to go completely unnoticed. Okay? Then, at any time or times later, a remote attacker simply queries a specific URL on that company's web server, which references the web script that was deposited into a script executable directory, which is to say along with all the other .phps or .asps, and the attacker's code comes to life. It's really kind of diabolical. It's trivial on the one hand and doesn't take a rocket scientist. After all, PHP was designed to be dead simple to use as a page scripting authoring language. So you just always hope that it's only your code that your server is running. What Microsoft points out is that the instant a new vulnerability surfaces, attackers are now scanning the internet and using the new vulnerability to quickly get a foothold, to quickly drop a web shell onto what might be briefly vulnerable targets before they're patched. And once there, the script can then sit unseen. It's not running. Nothing is going to detect it. It's like it's just some text code sitting in an executable script directory, but it will come to life when invoked. So, you know, as I said, if minutes later the vulnerability that allowed it in is patched to foreclose any future use of that vulnerability, it's too late. Now that server is carrying a malicious script that will jump into service whenever it's invoked through simply receiving a querying URL. Microsoft notes that the challenge of discovery of such implants is hampered by the sheer volume of network traffic, plus the usual noise of constant internet attacks. This means that targeted internet traffic aimed at a web server will blend right in, making detection of web shells a lot harder and requiring advanced behavior-based detection that can somehow identify and stop malicious activities that are essentially hiding in plain sight. So anyway, I just sort of wanted to put that on everyone's radar. It is a growing trend. It has doubled in a year. it is, you know, the concept of empowering web servers to interpret textual scripts as code is incredibly empowering. You know, this method of running server-side code has pretty much taken over the world. It's the way it's being done now. And the downside is that, well, text files on the server are being interpreted as code. Yeah. In other words, it's both what we want and what we don't want.
Right.
And it really is a growing problem.
I mean, somebody put a PHP script ages ago on one of my servers.
Yep.
And because I had that folder open for FTP, you know, people could execute it. And, you know, that's a real flaw. You really shouldn't have folders that just anything in there can be executed. That's just, but that's one of the biggest flaws with PHP, in my opinion.
Yeah. And in fact, we've talked about several of the recent problems with WordPress, and we're right. about to talk about another one, is that you can do that .png.php right. or the other way around, right. you know, double extensions, and it'll be seen by the system as an image file. But when the PHP interpreter is invoked with it, it'll go, oh, look, I've got something to do. It's a script, and it'll run it. So, wow.
Wow is wow.
Or whammo.
Whammo. Bow, zam, zoom.
Biff.